traditions in the great outdoors.
Welcome to Ozark Traditions TV podcast, a place where outdoor topics are discussed. Now sit back as today's host brings you the outdoors inside.
Ozark Traditions in the great outdoors.
Hey guys, welcome back to another Ozark Traditions TV podcast. I'm TJ. I got Matt and Justin here with me, like always. We're going to have a guest coming on the show here in just a little bit, Corey Groff. He's a predator hunter. If you guys don't know who he is, be sure after the podcast here to look him up on Facebook, check him out. He's a coyote whacking machine. We're going to talk to him about doing a little predator hunting here in a little bit, but before we get him on the phone, I got to talk about what I had going on. Missouri's black powder season has rolled upon us. It's the last hoorah for all you gun hunters out there. So if you didn't get it done during rifle season, now is your chance. I got lucky enough to go out 2 days. So I went out the first night by myself with just my old smoke bowl. No sights, none of that. And I didn't see nothing but bucks. All I got's a doe tag, so that worked out great. But I did get a chance to farm my hunt the way it sets up. I was able to sit across from where these deer have been coming out, and I just glassed all night, and I spotted a pretty good buck over there. And I thought, well, I had a trail camera over there, so I'm going to go over there and check this trail camera. So I get over there, or I guess I checked it the next morning. That's what I did. Okay, so I went home, and then the next morning, I was like, I'm going to run over and check that trail camera and see what deer that was I seen come out there. Because I'm trying to look at this thing a mile and a half away. And I got binoculars. They're pretty good, but they ain't that good. So I get over there, and I'm checking my trail camera. Or I pulled the card, and I'm going to take it home and look at it because I'm not fancy like everybody else and got the cool stuff that you can. And I'm driving across the field, and I look over, and there's a deer horn laying there. And I've already found anybody that's looked at my Facebook page or anything up or know anything about a deer I was hunting this year. I called him the Drop Time 10. I've already found one of his sides, and I know for a fact that he shed both sides. So he's already safe for the year. And I guess I'll go ahead and tell on myself here. I might have swung and missed at a 10-pointer last week. Or actually, I hit a stick. I don't know if that counts as a swing and a miss. I mean,
I don't know. I feel like it counts.
Yeah, I guess it does. Anyways, I hit a tree limb, bounced. I mean, shot right over his back.
What deer was it?
Same one I missed last year, opening day. And we've confirmed this because
So we thought the Drop Time 10 was that buck.
Right.
But that's not him.
No, it is not. Once I found his shed, I had a set of sheds from a buck that me and Matt called the flyer buck because he had a really cool flyer hanging off back of his horn. And you set them right next to each other, and they're fit right in each other.
Yeah, it's just him.
It's him. Comes to find out that the 10-pointer that I missed opening day last year on Ozark Traditions TV is the same 10-pointer I missed 3 nights ago.
On Ozark Traditions TV.
It could be on there too. I filmed it all. But I was like, you know what? I missed him. I didn't spook him too bad, and I'll see him again. Well, I've seen him again. He shed both sides. I found him. That was the horn I seen laying in the field. And the deer where I'm hunting are dropping horns faster than we can hunt them. I mean, it's just crazy. These big bucks are just... But I was like, man, I seen that big buck the night before, and I don't think it's the same deer. Well, my wife has a buck tag for a gun. So I'm like, Meg, tomorrow night, let's go hunting. She's like, well, I don't want to go if I'm not going to see anything. And I'm like, well, neither do I, but you don't know if you're not going to see anything unless you go.
It's called hunting for a reason.
Right. I've tried, yeah. So I talked her into going, and we get there, and there's two other guys that hunt out there. Well, they're parked just down the hill from where I'm wanting to go. They drive their side-by-side all the way 10 foot from their ground blind, which, granted, these guys are not young. These are older gentlemen. And I thought, oh, my God. So I just drove my truck in there. I was like, well, because we were going to walk, you know, like you should. Because, I mean, I was just going to park the milk barn, walk across the big field. I was going right up there. But after I seen that, I was like, well, what's the difference? And
you might as well drive, too.
So we just drove up there. And he kind of acted like he was going to go that way. It's almost like hunting public land out here, guys. I mean, it's not, but it is. But thank God he took a left turn and he went down where his tent's at. He's got a little tent down there that he's spray painted. It's just, it's a deal anyways. And Megan's like, well, what are we gonna? I said, we're going right up there where I seen that buck. He walked out last night. I said, I bet you he's going to do it again. And this was the 10-pointer that I seen the night before. So we get up there and we're sitting there and nothing. 5 o'clock rolls, 4:45. And I could tell, I could feel her over here.
Could you feel her staring at you?
She's like, this guy's the worst guide ever. And I just kept saying, Meg, I was like, just hang in there. I was like, you know, sometimes he's, it was a little warm. I was like, maybe he's going to move late. And I peeked through the cedar tree and I thought, oh, thank God. Which it wasn't the buck that I was in there to hunt, but it was another deer that I've seen. And I looked up through there and I thought, right there. And then she starts getting excited. And he's coming from my, I'm sitting on my left side. I'm going to try to paint you guys a picture on this. I'm sitting, Megan's to my right. This buck walks out to my left. So she's got to like look through me to see this deer. Well, he's walking down this field and he's coming towards us perfect. 30-acre field right here, wide open, beautiful. And I've got my camera and I'm filming him. He's coming across there and I thought, okay. I said, well, as soon as he gets out in this opening, we'll shoot him. She said, okay. So he's coming. Well, I could feel the gun barrel and it got about, I don't know, 6-8 inches from the end of my camera. And he was wide open right there, out in the wide open, and I'm filming him, and I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to let him walk another 20, 30 yards, so she's shooting straight at him. And I said, okay, go ahead and take your safety off. I heard click, boom, and I mean just smoked this, like the camera, the recoil from the gun shut my camera off, guys. Now, I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance. The shot is not, it'll be... Matt's going to have to work his magic on it because for like 10 seconds, or not that long, but it felt like that. It was probably 2 seconds. My camera shut off. So all you can hear was, all you see is the deer stop, and then it starts back up, and there's a bunch of smoke, and I'm laughing, and Megan's like, was you ready? No, but thank God we got GoPros, so we'll be able to piece that together there. She's like, was you not ready? And I was like, no, I was not.
But she was.
She was ready. Well...
That's all that matters.
Bless her heart. We've had so much trouble this year. She hasn't killed a buck for 2 or 3 years. So she, you know, this sucker got 70 yards. That's as close as she's been one for a minute. And she wasn't going to let him just, she's like, well, what if he'd have walked up there and seen us? I was like, he'd have stood there for at least 2 or 3 seconds. Like, you probably could have got a shot. Once he got to that 70 yard range, he was already in trouble. And anyway, she shot and, it was just, it's a whole deal, but that's how it went down. That's how we're going to, you know, we don't fake it on here till we make it. We make it how it is. And she killed him. We got up there. She's like, did I hit it? Because you know how the muzzleloaders are. When you shoot, you can't see nothing. I mean, it's just, and she, but I did catch a glimpse of him going up in the woods and he had the old cartwheel leg going on.
Yeah, it wasn't working no more, was it?
Right. And I was like, no, you hit him. And I heard him fall up there. But after her bow experience, she was pretty gun shy. She didn't even want me to call you.
Right.
She's like, let's go find him and then call Matt and he can come out. I was like, well, if we go find him, I don't need Matt to come out here. You know, that's kind of stupid. She's like, well, let's go find him. I don't want Matt coming all the way out here and I miss him again or something. She was just all worried about it. So I was like, all right, let's go up there.
You should have told her. You should have said, it's okay, Matt's used to it. He hunts with me.
Right. Exactly. How many times has Matt come out there and looked for deer with me? So
it's no big deal.
We got up there and she smoked him. He went 30 yards up in the woods there and died. And he was turned out. He was a really nice buck, mature deer. He was broke off. Unfortunately, he had a main beam broke off, but he was a great buck and he still had his horns. So
that was a positive.
That was a very good, but you know, it was good. Meg killed her a buck and she gets to be on the show this year. She's actually got her stuff all done up nice. We didn't sneak it up on him and film it or nothing. I mean,
her hair was nice.
Right. She didn't talk very much. Right. But
he was a shooter in my book from the picture.
Oh, he was a nice deer.
Oh, he's a nice deer, yeah.
I'd say if he wouldn't have broke that off, he'd have been a mid-120s type buck, 8-pointer. I mean, he was just an 8. Well, I guess technically he was a 9 because he had a crab, but he was a fully mature deer in where we live. He's a 4.5-year-old deer, and me and Matt has both decided in our neck of the woods.
Shoot him.
With the hunting pressure, that's about as mature as they're. I mean, they'll get bigger, older than that, but right there, that's
I mean, if you want to wait, you can watch neighbor shoot him.
Right. Well, if you want to wait, you can watch us shoot him on Ozark Traditions TV when he jumps the fence. You know, that's, I mean, that's how it's going to go.
Or your neighbor's going to shoot him.
The neighbor, or the other guys that, like I said, I hunt this property, okay? And there's four other people that hunt out there with me. Now, it's 1,200 acres. So you're like, okay, that ain't, what are you griping about? All right. Two of the guys that hunt out there deer hunt. That's me and Brad. We play the wind. We walk quietly to our tree stands. We don't leaf blow paths to our tree stands. We don't weed eat. We don't, you know, we just go in there. We hunt. The other guys, like I said, if you guys are, I'm not going to say your names, but if you're listening to the podcast, it's whatever. I get it. They're older men, so they don't really put a whole lot of effort into
They don't sneak out there. They just
they park their side by side 50 yards from their ground blind. So yeah. Why put the ground like? I wish he would just drive his truck out there and park on the edge of field and shut it up because it's quieter. Because the side to side he's got, I don't think has an exhaust on it. It sounds like an airplane coming across the bottom. I mean, it's, and every time I talk to him, I'm like, well, did you guys see any deer? Oh, we ain't seen no deer out. You know, I don't know what's going on. Well, the night before I could bow hunt down there and see 15, 20 deer. But I walk from the milk barn to, well, anybody listening don't know what I'm talking about. Matt does. It's a mile back there, but it's easy. It's flat.
Right. It's a bottom.
It's a big old hay bottom. That's all that's all this farm is, really. It's not flat. It's
that,
steep.
Hey, that part's
sides,
flat.
But that part's flat. But so they don't hunt. But you know what? I can't complain. They hunt 6-7 times a year. Just seems like they hunt 6-7 times a year when it's the best time to be out there hunting. So, but I, you know what? I can't complain if I don't kill a deer this year. I had more than enough opportunities. So, but the old drop tied 10, Matt, he's going to make her through this year. So
you got him. Come on.
What do you got to say?
Matt, how's the trapping doing?
Yeah.
The trapping's going pretty good. Pretty good. So, we've caught a few raccoons. We've caught a few possums. Nothing exotic at this point.
Give it time.
You know, we're just running the old dog proofs. And the cool thing for me is I took the whole week of Christmas off. And so my boy Isaac has really been excited about the trapping. He's really enjoying it. So maybe we'll save a turkey egg or two. I don't know.
Oh, no. Every time you can take something like that out of the herd, you're helping something.
Which we're still going on it. Dad's been running the trap line for me while I'm back to work now, so. We'll see.
I'm trying to trap a groundhog right now, and it ain't working too good.
Well, what kind of set you got for him?
I got a live trap for him. That's the only trap I got. He burrowed underneath a house.
Is he still out and about, though, or has he? Because those things hibernate.
We've been seeing him off and on.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a thorn in my side. I didn't know the whole groundhog thing was a thing. Until everybody's like, oh, you know, killing a groundhog. I killed a pile of those suckers this year getting in my grain barn. I like shotgunning them. I don't know about the live trap. I don't know if you're going to relocate it to some PETA guy's yard, but I'd just shotgun that sucker.
Yeah.
Get you one of them nice 70-degree days. Yeah. He'll get out there munching around on some green grass and drop the hammer.
Yeah.
That'd be all right, but he's not where I can see it every day.
Yeah.
So he's about 2 miles from my house.
Oh, well, that's a deal.
I don't know how.
Have to camp out for that groundhog.
Is there a lot of critters running around over there, like pets and stuff?
No, this is not an abandoned house, but a house that we don't do nothing with.
Right, you know, but I mean, no house cats or
neighbors.
No, nobody even lives in it.
Well, I was just going to say, I could tell you how you catch them, but if.
Duke's number two.
No, I'd get one of them conibears.
Ooh. You went there.
Wherever his hole's at.
Wait a minute. I thought you got to set those underwater. Oh, you can set the little ones, can't you?
Yeah. Set one of the legal ones above dry land. And that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that Duke's number two foothold.
Yeah, Duke's number two. I'll send you pictures later, Justin. But honestly, a Duke number, you talk about that. I caught some behind the shop like that. just found where their hole's at and set a dirt. I'm not going to use the, because I'm going to sound like an idiot. I put it in the dirt by the hole and I caught him. You know, I don't think groundhogs are real smart.
If you don't have some of those Duke's number twos, they're not very expensive.
$15 for a good one. But
I was just sitting here thinking, a few years ago, the trap thing just brought this to my mind. We had a coon come in the yard one day with a snap trap, you know, like a leg trap.
Yeah.
Dragging it on his leg.
Yeah, they didn't have a steak very good, did they?
I apparently not.
I recommend tying those to like a tree.
So what I do.
Or driving a piece of rebar.
So I build my own leads for them, Justin. I'll take like your smooth wire for fencing.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it in my vise. I get 6 feet of it and I double it over, put it in my vise, put it in the end of my drill, and I twist it where it's like, you know, twice as strong.
Yeah.
And then I braid it and I tie a loop in one end of it. And so then I just take that trap and I run it back through my loop that I make. I'll put it around a fence post. I put it around a sapling. They'll never pull a stake.
Yeah.
Now, I've come to a couple of traps that have only got a leg left.
Right.
But, you know, I still got my trap.
These animals will do what they got to do to survive. And
sometimes other animals, they're out hunting.
Right.
Stumble across. We lost a coon last week. All we had was a leg. And then we went about 100 yards further down the trap line. I'm like, oh, there's a coyote.
Right.
And I was like, oh. That's what happened.
I bet that was a battle, though.
Well, what got us was when this coon came into the yard, none of us trapped. So we don't know where this coon even came from.
Yeah, he probably drug
it. This trap was all rusted up. We killed the coon because the coon wasn't going to live. His leg was infected.
Right.
Well, and which is the right thing to do anyways. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't know. As far as we know, this coon's had this trap on forever. You know,
right. He probably drug it from Swadley's house.
Well, the trap being rusty doesn't mean nothing. Yeah, mine are all rusty. Well, a lot of guys season their traps.
Yep.
So you're going to want them to be kind of rusty. You don't want a brand new shiny trap. When your traps come brand new, guys, what they'll do, and I've seen this done, is they'll take walnuts and put them in a big barrel or something, and they got like a die, which they make a die. But I've seen guys use walnut hulls. And they dye their traps, and it helps keep because
when you get a
brand new trap, they've got like that oil on them.
Yeah, keep them from rusting.
You got to get that off there.
Yeah, you want them rusty.
Well, because especially if you're going to trap coyotes, coons maybe not so much, but coyotes can smell that. So you got to treat your traps.
This trap was probably an outlaw trap that shouldn't be used.
Yeah. Maybe
one of those traps. It was an old trap.
Yeah, have teeth on it or something.
So, I mean, it could have been somebody forgot their trap several years ago and that coon just so happened to walk that line that day and get popped.
Who knows?
You never know.
The main thing is you killed the coon. That's the main goal.
And I got me a free trap.
And you got you a trap.
I gotta tell real quick. So, to dispatch these animals, I think that's the proper term.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't like that term.
We've been shooting in the head.
Kill these animals.
I got my grandpa's .22 pistol.
Right.
And so my boy, Isaac's like, I want to shoot him, Dad. I said, okay, buddy. You know, so the first possum we catch.
Right.
Right. There he is, buddy, in all his glory. Well, he comes out of the truck. He's proud as a peacock. I hand him the old pistol. He pulls the hammer back. Pow! He missed it, I don't know, 8-10 inches.
Yeah.
Well, it was a possum. So it played... Possum. He said, got him. I got so tickled that I said, no, buddy. I said, you didn't? He goes, yeah, look at him. He's dead. I said, no. I said,
you know what? I'm going to give him another one just because sometimes these guys will fool you.
Right, yeah. So I said, no, he's still alive. I said, grab a hold of him. Well, then he looked at me. He was like, uh-uh. You know, yeah. I ain't grabbing my possum. Yeah. I said, oh, he won't bite you.
You know what? I really think that's true.
I grabbed him. He didn't bite me. I mean,
Do you know how many people I've seen just walk up? Justin Swadley, which had him on the show, he grabs them like a cat.
Yeah, you can just scruff him. I scruffed him, and boy, and he opened up his old mouth, and Isaac's like, "Whoa, he's alive, he's alive." I say, "Yeah, I know."
They
like,
won't hardly
you,
bite you.
You missed him pretty good on that one.
I think they're all just, well, they're just talk.
Yeah.
I've learned my lesson from grabbing live or dead animals. So
yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's best to, if they're dead, I know they won't bite.
I mean,
you.
His foot was in a trap. I don't feel like he could do anything too wild to me, but I had to.
Now the ones with the rings on them, the tails and mask.
Now we've caught.
Don't pick them up.
We've caught a couple. Isaac said that one's got kind of a short tail, Dad, and I said, "No, buddy." I said, "I think their tails quit growing, and the rest of them just keep getting bigger and bigger."
Yeah,
you know. Right. We've caught a couple that were.
Yeah, when the coon weighs 25 pounds, it's like his tail's probably normal size. It's just, right. The coon's big.
Right.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good to do that, and this is a good time of year to do it. Like I said earlier, I don't know if we've got any shed hunters on here, but, man, I'm telling it's
they're starting.
It's cool,
not
but it
really.
Sucks when you're trying to bow hunt them and their horns are falling off.
It's, well, and that's another thing. Me and Isaac checking the traps. Some of our big upper ridge fields, we've seen bucks out there that have shed one side.
I glassed 3 bucks tonight that didn't have any horns, and I could tell they're bucks because, I mean, you're just looking at them. They're like sumo wrestlers with no horns out there. It's just like,
God. I was wanting to touch on that right there. If you guys are still out there bow hunting and the bucks are dropping their horns, a good set of binoculars will save you from killing a future trophy.
Oh, yeah. I think
my recommendation, if you haven't already killed your doe, maybe next year.
Right. I mean, unless you can tell. Okay, so I have my black powder. I still have a doe tag, and I've been going. My plan was to shoot a yearling. Because I know now, you know, maybe it's a button buck, but whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's what. So, like, if I had no luck. It's so crazy. This farm I hunt, it's good and bad all in all. It's actually, and this is going to sound cocky, and I don't mean it to, but it's hard to go out there and kill a doe because all you see is bucks. And Matt's been out there with me and knows what I'm talking. Now, when I say all I see bucks, now, like, 90% of them aren't much. But they're all bucks.
Right.
So
we need to switch farms for a day, TJ.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I've got the opposite effect going on.
Well, okay, so I got all these bucks running around, and I'm not killing any bucks. My wife killed the biggest buck so far this year, which is good. You know what? I was really hoping she'd kill that big 10-pointer, which I think I found his sheds, but there's a couple different deer. Now, the good news is, knock on wood, I had a mega giant show up 3 or 4 nights ago, and I've got some history with him from last year. We called him the Bladed 8 last year, but he's a
10
this year, and he's probably a 6.5-year-old buck. I mean,
but you're maybe going to have to night hunt him.
Right, yeah, so I'm going to have to
there's that
call the MDC and see if they'll let me just put a dusted on light out there or something. I haven't got no pictures of him. They've all been at midnight, but this thing's impressive, guys. I mean, I'm no good with this score. So that's another thing. I found the sheds for the old drop time 10 or a shed. And me and Matt had him guessed at 150 inches, which granted, I've only found one side. But judging by the side that I found, now that we've got it in our hand, we're both saying probably mid 140, maybe 140, maybe mid 140s at best. So, you know, we wasn't terrible far off, which it never had nothing to do with score anyways. If that deer had got. I mean, I tried to kill him 6-7 times. Never did get it done. But the deer wasn't as big as I thought he was. Like, you look at these trail camera pictures and you're like, because I've got a picture on my phone when that deer walked in after me, and I've shown it to people, and they swear to God that deer's 100. I mean, he looks like a moose in that picture. So, but this buck that I've just gotten pictures of, I've shown it to these guys earlier, he just looks giant. So, I don't know how big he is. Is he a shooter? So that's all I'm worried about. And he's got both his horns. So that's cool.
For now.
I haven't got a picture of him in another day. It's every day. So either the shed hunting's going to be amazing out there this year, which it already has been, really.
Yeah.
And next year's big buck crop ought to be prime out there. I mean, I've got 2 for sure big bucks that are going to be, and they live there.
If they don't starve to death this winter, they'll be good.
And that's the thing, like, guys. We do this podcast every week, so we'll try to keep up with how the deer, if anybody is still bow hunting, they're hammering the green just as hard as they can hammer. I mean, every one of these deer, all my cameras are right on the edge of a clover, hay field green. That's it. There's nothing else. I've walked in the woods a little bit. There's nothing. So if you're lucky enough to have a crop still standing, or soybeans, or I don't know how you're turnip patch is doing.
Go on.
Well, the cows are in there, ain't they?
No.
Oh.
But
the deer's just ate it all.
Yeah, I moved the cows through there the other day. Or dad did.
Yeah.
Super cool. And
I hate cows.
They've eaten it to the dirt, literally.
Yeah.
Like they've eaten the bulbs. I mean, the tops have been gone, but now whatever bulbs they produced, yeah. I guess it's bulb, whatever.
I mean, they're starving to death, guys. Like I drove by a farmer guy, Wayne. He lives up the road, family member, and he feeds his cows out of feed troughs. Well, every night there's about 15 does standing at that feed trough, and I'm sure they're up there eating whatever sweet feed or feed was left over.
Whatever spilled, yeah.
I mean, they're just trying to bring this to eat.
I'd be asking that farmer if you could put a blind up there.
No, he won't even let he might let my wife, but he's his pet deer. But Danny, the guy I hunt the farm, hold on, Justin, he rolled a hay bale out. There was deer eating in that hay bale last night, eating the hay that he rolled out for the cows. Now, if that doesn't tell you that the deer are hungry, I don't know. It's
a hunt the ring feeders.
You could take, and I think that's why they're losing their horns so rapidly, is just the stress of between the rut and no food. I mean. But you know what? That 10 drop time buck, now that I know who he is, last year he shed his horns first
about
part,
the same time.
Because I felt that was the first set of sheds I found was that flyer buck, which is him.
Yeah, and Joker shed his horns last year when we got back from Florida.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe I'm just wrong on when bucks shed their horns. I don't know if the bigger, because a lot of the little bucks still have their horns.
Yeah.
A lot of the younger deer that I've seen out there all still have horns.
From what I've seen, that's out at our farm too.
You know, I seen a buck. I thought I was going to kill me a doe tonight, and it was two spikes. Which, like Justin said, a good pair of binoculars is handy dandy notebook, because they were like illegal spikes. Like they were
right
4.5 inches. They'd have been a bad deal. Which, thank God, I'm shooting an iron sight muzzleloader. They'd have been pretty close anyways. But I'm not going to lie, I don't got the eagle eyes I used to, so I pulled the binoculars, which I thought they looked bigger, and like I said earlier, I was kind of just wanting to focus on a yearling. Better eating, easier to drag, just try to fill my doe tag. All right, guys, well, we're going to take us a quick break, and we'll come back. When we come back, we're going to call Corey Groff. He's going to talk to us a little bit about some predator hunting, so that should be interesting to hear. Anybody who's interested in figuring anything. I am. I don't know much about it. So we'll get him on the phone, talk with him a little bit, and see if we could pick his brain on how to kill some of these coyotes. So we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Matt Smith of Ozark Traditions TV. I hope you are enjoying this OTTV podcast. When you're not listening to the team members discuss hunting strategies and telling stories, you can go to our YouTube channel and watch your favorite episodes there. And while you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and give us a like. Thanks for listening to this week's OTTV podcast. Hunting with my family.
Who could ask for more? All right, guys, welcome back. Today we have our guest on here is Corey Groff. He is a predator hunter from southern Missouri, right? Do you live down there in southern Missouri somewhere?
Yes, sir. Right around Houston, Missouri.
Eastern, well, same thing. So, Corey, first of all, thanks for coming on the podcast, talking with us today. We're going to talk predator hunting, and like I was telling him before we started this deal, me personally, I don't know much about it. I've shot a couple wise deer hunting on accident, coyotes and stuff, but I did call. Hey, I take that back. I did call in a gray fox one time, and I killed it. but I shot it with way too big of a gun.
So you're saying you're like semi-pro.
I had that 204, and I've been dying to try it out. So my brother-in-law let me borrow. He has a Primos Alpha Dog call. And I took it out there, and I'm like, I'm going to squeal me up a coyote. I've seen guys do it on TV. It's easy. So I go down there, and I'm doing all this crap. And there was this big old briar patch out in the middle of the field. And I thought, man, that just looks like a spot for something to live. I don't know. And sure as crap, here comes this gray fox bouncing up through there. Well, I shot him, and it just split him plumb. And it was terrible. Because I would have got like a hide tanned or something cool on it, but it looked like he got hit by a semi truck. So that was about the end of my predator hunting career. But so
let's hear how to really do it.
The 204 is a pretty sweet gun, though. So let's start off like that. So Corey, I know you guys probably use multiple different guns and depending on what you're hunting, but what kind of gun do you use to do your predator hunting with?
Well, currently right now I'm shooting a 224 Valkyrie. It's actually a custom built gun that I had, a guy over here by, Summersville, Missouri built the gun for me, Ryan Hunt. He does a really good job, but, I mean, you don't have to hunt with a custom built gun, obviously, but, my favorite all around predator hunting gun, I'm going to have to say would be a 22-250.
Yeah. My brother's got one of them. He actually deer hunted with it. And it, you know what? It worked good for the deer if you shot him like in the neck or something, but it was not.
Right.
Yeah. But those guns are pretty sweet. I mean, it shot a long ways. I could tell you that.
Corey, how did you get started predator hunting?
Well, that's a good question, Justin. I'm like most of us probably here on this podcast, you know, I just a farm raised kid, just a country boy kid. And, I was probably about 12 or 13 years old, maybe. There was a fella there that lived in the town that I went to school at, that's about all he did was in the wintertime, he was eating predator hunting. He'd come driving up to the local gas station there with coyotes and bobcats and stuff in the back of his truck, and I just took to it. I really thought that was something special because he was doing something at the time nobody else was doing. And that's kind of what got me into it. I'll credit him for that. So I was probably about 13 or 14 when I killed my first coyote, and it just kind of, you know, went from there. And I really didn't get serious about predator hunting until about 12 or 15 years ago, is when I really just said, you know, okay, I'm really going to take this to the next level. And I just got more serious about it.
So
now you travel.
Yeah, that's what
you travel all over the U.S., don't you?
I try to, sometimes it don't always work out. I like to do a trip, about every year out to Oklahoma for hunt out there with a good friend of mine. I've went to Texas. I've hunted Kansas and Nebraska and Colorado, Arkansas. So yeah, I do hunt a lot of the Midwest states for sure. Do a lot of coyote competitions and whatnot in different areas. But for the most part, I stay right here, you know, around southern Missouri, Texas County. But I do like to travel outside of the state quite a bit if I can.
So when you say you're a predator hunter, I mean, your main thing's probably coyotes, I'm assuming, but like the bobcats and fox and all kinds of, well, basically anything that's predator, I guess.
TJ, yeah. This guy's a bobcat killing fool.
See, I think that is cool. I think that would be so cool. Now, so we're up here around Lake of the Ozarks, and we've got bobcats. I've got trail camera pictures of them and stuff, and a couple buddy of mine has trapped them. But I've never been able to, or been known of anybody being able to call them in here. So is there like, there's got to be a trick to it, or like, I guess finding them is the main thing and then going from there.
Take Corey, yeah. That's the trick.
Well, I wish I had time to go with everybody. It don't seem to work out that way. But as far as a trick, I wouldn't really say there's much of a trick to it. I mean, you can't, and same goes with any of the predators. You can't call them in if they're not there. And, you know, I've learned, you know, over the last, oh, I don't know, 20 or 30 years doing this, that, you know, you've got to have those predators there to be able to call them in. So I really, you know, do the groundwork like we all do for, you know, whether we're managing a deer herd or a turkey herd or a turkey flock, excuse me, or if we're predator hunting, you know, we look for the sign that they give us. And if it's not there, you go on and you look for them elsewhere. And that's kind of what I do with bobcats. But I do target certain areas. I look for something that's thick, a lot of thick brush, or maybe like a cedar glade, stuff like that. Cats really like water for whatever reason, especially bobcat. They really want to be close to water. So when I look for trying to call a bobcat in, I definitely want to do it around a creek or a pond, something like that, because they just got to have it.
Which is weird because most people think of cats like not liking water. But I've seen a bobcat swim the river before while I was fishing. So, I mean, they don't, water don't bother them. So,
no, they're different than your normal house cat, but there's a lot of similarities with them too, though.
They're very curious, I feel like. Like, I think, because I've trapped with a buddy of mine. We had him on here last weekend. And he said for bobcat sets, he'd take like duck wings and stuff and hang them in the trees. And it just like to attract them, like the spinning around and stuff. And like the bobcats are real curious.
I listened to that podcast. Justin seemed like he was a very knowledgeable fellow. I'd like to meet him sometime.
He's something else. I mean, he was a big time trapper back when he was younger. And now he's got married with kids and stuff, so he's not quite as wild about it as he was. But I knew he knew a lot about it. So he's definitely something else. You'd like to meet him, I'm sure.
Well, and I don't know nothing about trapping. I'll be quite honest with you. I've done very, very little trapping. But I had a neighbor that, and Justin might even know the guy. I'm trying to think what his first name was. He was a breed love was his last name. They did trapping and furs for years. And his grandson worked for me for a little while. And of course, he learned, you know, off his grandpa. And he was a very good trapper. But he would tell me all the time how to trap bobcats because I was always curious about, you know, bobcats. But he kind of said the same thing about using a feather or something like that to grab their attention.
Yeah. Okay. Now something else I've seen guys do a couple times is calling in coons. I've seen guys like they'll try to find a den tree or somewhere there's a lot of coons and they'll squeal them. I've seen them do it. It looks like it'd be a heck of a lot of fun. Have you ever done that before?
Yes, sir. Actually, I've got a video on YouTube of me and my son and another buddy of mine up in north central Missouri calling in coons in the daytime, and it's a lot of fun. And it, you know, for somebody that's looking for something a little different, you know, may not sometimes, you know, coyote hunting just for everybody, and coon hunting, something like that, you don't think of being a daytime, you know, sport. But man, I tell you what, you catch the right day and you can call in a lot of coons right on top of you, and it's a lot of fun.
I think that's something a lot of people don't realize about a raccoon is they are they're an aggressive predator. Like they're not just trash pandas. Like they will hunt stuff down and kill it. I mean, I've seen them do it. It might sound a little crazy here, but I wouldn't put it past a coon killing a fawn. I mean, I could see. If the opportunity presents itself, I mean.
I agree with that, especially you get, you know, some of them coons that weigh 40, 45 pounds. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't take nothing for them to haul up a fawn pretty easy.
I got to bring it back up again just because that. Did you see this possum this guy shot in his chicken coop?
Yes, I did. And I was kind of like you guys. If Film and Stream wouldn't have publicized it, I wouldn't have believed it because it. The photo to me looked a little bit off angle, but
yeah,
that's a big possum.
it, like me and Matt said, it almost looked like he gave him the old long arm like you do a fish. But then, like I said, it's hard to believe that Field and Stream would even publish.
Well, and I mean, you can only long arm him so much.
Right.
So.
I mean, I don't care if he weighs 10 pounds. You can't hold him out there for so long. It was just cool. I thought that was cool. But, you know, everybody thinks of a predator hunter as just being a coyote hunter. But, you know, the more you look into it, there's so much different. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like I said, I haven't had much luck doing it, but I'm sure. I know a lot of the times I'll set up in a place where I've been deer hunting and I've seen a coyote out there one time.
The only successful predator hunting I've had is out of the feed truck. Like, there's a coyote, roll the window down, shoot it.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with me and Matt, the timing of the year.
Right.
Because it seems like we're always trying to do it after deer season. So, like, January, February. I mean, is that like a breeding season for coyotes? I mean, what's going on that time of year for coyotes?
Well, that's exactly right, TJ. So we're probably getting pretty close right now for coyotes to start breeding. Probably within the next couple weeks, they'll really, you know, be more active as far as that goes. So they've been paired up for a while. If you've noticed, and other, you know, people in different areas probably noticed that you'll see more coyotes together, you know, right after deer season. And they're getting ready for that. They know that's getting ready to come. But they do. They start breeding around probably the second or third week of January. And, of course, they stay in a cycle for about, it's probably runs about 3 to 4 weeks, you know, give or take a week or two there. So, yeah, it'll run plumb up into February.
So I guess whenever the breeding season's going on, are they harder to call in or are they easier to call in?
Well, to me, that early part of their breeding season, they're very vulnerable, you know, because the reason I think that is because, you know, they're still trying to get that pecking order. They're still, you know, and a lot of people say coyotes, you know, breed for life, and that I think there's some truth to that. But that old coyote, he's going to stray a little bit on another female if he can.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they're not not the relationship kind, you know.
No. And then, you know, but that old female that's the dominant female in that area. Now she's not going to like that. And you get into more coyote based sounds, coyote vocal sounds that time of year, and seems like your success rate kind of goes up a little bit more over something, maybe prey distressed.
Right. See, then, I think that was what me and Matt's problem was, because we're out here trying to distress cottontail and stuff like that.
They weren't having
and
it.
Nothing. And I'm thinking maybe if we would have went with like a coyote sounds, like breeding sounds, because a lot of your electronic calls, which is all we'll use, has at least something on there about breeding season or some kind of, you know, like I said, I'm pretty dumb when it comes to the different kinds of calls. So that's kind of why I was curious to have you on here. I know there's different things for different deal. Like, I'm a big time duck hunter. So I know, like, if you've got birds working pretty close, you use a certain, you know, you want a feed call, you want to keep it subtle. You don't want to be real loud. And if they're a long ways away, you want to bring them in so you get louder. So I don't know. I'm sure with coyotes, it's kind of the different time of year, different kind of sounds.
Right. I would definitely agree with that. I would use in that breeding season, I would use something more of a coyote based sound, that all these different manufacturers, they make, like you said, different types of breeding vocal sounds that are available on their calls, or you can purchase different sounds, you know, for that unit. To maybe make your hunt more successful. Then you get into the later part of that breeding season, and it kind of almost puts you in mind of you know, like when the rut gets real hot and heavy, and bucks kind of just hold up and sit down with the doe, you know, they there's nothing you can do to get them to budge. And it's kind of the same way with coyotes. because there is kind of like a lull right there that seems like you're just not going to get them to budge. And usually for me, that's usually about mid-February.
Yeah.
Is
about when me and you try to kill them, Matt.
Yeah.
What is your call sequence when you go set up? What do you do first?
Well, it really depends on, of course, the time of year. It depends on the terrain. And it depends on kind of what's been working for me the last week or so. I don't really stick to a certain call sequence, but like this time of year, this what I would call the early part of predator hunting, and I don't usually call it that. It's just because it's after, you know, most of the deer seasons that are around. So it's just time for me to be able to get out and not, you know, worry about messing somebody's deer hunt up too bad. But I'll start out, and like I said, I guess I'm targeting a bunch of different predators this time of year. You know, I'm targeting fox and bobcats and coyotes. So I'm going to start out with a prey distress sound. And usually that's going to be a rabbit. But that's just my choice. Everybody kind of has their own style and whatnot that, you know, that I've met that are, you know, seasoned predator hunters. You can ask 10 of us the same question. We'll probably give you 10 different answers. But that's what I start with. I start with a rabbit prey distress. And, then if I don't have something triggered within, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, I might move to another rabbit prey distress. And then I'll keep moving the sound. I'll move the sound up and down with volume, to make it sound a little bit more realistic, you know, like something's actually got a hold of that rabbit or that bird and is trying to take it off, you know, and there, I know a lot of guys use some pauses in their sound. They'll take that sound and maybe shut it off for, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. But I choose not to. I let my sound run this time of year. I let my prey distress sound run constantly, and I just use my volume. I ramp it up and ramp it down, not too loud, but not too soft. And then when I get several minutes in, I may get to where I turn that sound down really low. And that seems to me like if there's a bobcat hanging around, that will kind of shake one loose because they're so hard to see. They'll come into a set and they may climb up underneath the cedar tree and sit down and they'll just watch. They're so strange sometimes. Sometimes I'll have them come running in like a coyote, and then sometimes I'll have them come sneaking belly on the ground, you know, inch by inch. And then sometimes they're just sitting there just looking around and you don't even know they're there.
Yeah, it's very strange. I've watched them while I've been bow hunting, which if you're a bow hunter, you've got to watch all kinds of stuff. And the way that they just go through the woods, I mean, they're just... So here's a story. Here's a deal. Me and Matt this year, we, speaking of bobcats, could have wrung one's neck this year. I was hunting, we were bow hunting, and we had this mature, I'm talking 5.5-year-old buck, and he's 50, 60 yards coming to us, and he stops, and he kept looking up on top of the hill. And, I mean, this thing blowed out of there like you hit him with a rock. And me and Matt, I mean, the wind was perfect, and I'm like, what in the world is going on, man? I was like, it had been a coyote or something. Well, we seen it barreling down the hill. This bobcat, like, chased this buck off, and I'm talking a full-blown 200-pound whitetail buck. I mean, are they, what was he, I mean, surely he's not, like, trying to.
Surely he wasn't stalking that buck.
I'm going to say that bobcat would be definitely outmatched there, but I would not put it past him to try it.
I mean, I've seen videos of him jumping on, like, deer before, and I'm sure bobcats have killed deer before. I mean, that's just.
Right.
They're just like anything else. If the opportunity presents itself, I mean, you got to eat. So, but bobcat, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've got some pictures on my phone from a hunt that I did about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I called in a very, very large bobcat, and I, to this day, I can't tell you how I missed that cat, but I did. And he was there instantly. I mean, about the time I turned the call on, I noticed him coming, and he hops up on this log that's about 60 yards away. It's just like an old blow down log, and he just sits there and watches my decoy, and he's not really interested in it. He doesn't come any closer. And finally he hops off the log, gives me a broadside chop. I take the shot and I missed him actually. And at the time I thought I hit him, and he took off down a hillside, and I heard him go through a fence, and I could hear the barbed wire screeching on a fence post, you know, and I knew he'd hit the fence. And anyhow, long story short, I walked down the hill to look for him, and he wasn't there. And I get about another 10 yards down the hillside, and I see a pile of leaves about probably 2.5-3 foot high, stack of leaves in a circle about 5 or 6 feet. And I thought, what in the world is that? And I walked over there, and this bobcat had killed a deer, and it was a yearling deer. It was probably that year's deer. I say yearling, it had been a fawn, I guess. And the only thing I could see is the nose of that deer sticking out, and a little bit of his face had been chewed on, which is typical for a cat. You know, some of them start, they say mountain lions start around the, you know, around the gut. For some reason, mountain lion likes to eat that part of a deer first, and then, but they say bobcats tend to like to eat right around the head or neck, and it was true with that. I mean, this bobcat had a deer killed right there. It was quite a sight. I'll have to forward them pictures to you guys, see if I can find them and get them to you. It's quite something. I never would have believed it until I seen it.
Yeah,
that brings a question up to me. You know, where Corey and I live, and I don't know about where the north, Corey lives north of me.
Mm-hmm.
I've got quite a few mountain lions in my area. I'd say quite a few, at least three. That's a lot for our area.
Oh, yeah.
And have you ever called one in or seen one try to come in to give one of your calls?
Personally, no, I have not. And I don't know if I really want to.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, I don't know.
Well, I've seen them bow hunting and stuff. You know, I had one walk up on me bow hunting 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I'm sure that was probably quite the thrill, sitting in a deer stand and having something like that come walking up on you.
My feet didn't touch the ground back to the truck.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, did you sell the property or how's that working out?
No, I actually bought the property not too long ago. So.
That's like me with the nope rope. Some out on snakes. I'll just burn the hillsides off. Whatever I got to do. If I ever seen a snake somewhere, I'm done. Get me out of there.
I've got a friend, Justin, that has a deer lease east of Houston over here. That I think it was last year. I haven't really asked him about it this year, but last year. I don't know how many trail camera pictures he got of mountain lions, and that him several. And I actually do some hunting off over that way, but you know, I don't think about it when I'm calling. I, you know, and like I said, I kind of hope I never do, but it'd be a neat experience to see what that would look like come to the call.
So, what's the craziest thing you've ever called in predator hunting?
The craziest thing I ever called predator hunting. Boy, I don't.
Another person.
I have done that. And
that's what I was going to say. I could see somebody being like, "Oh, there's an animal in trouble over there. Let's go save it."
Well, it happened probably about 10 years ago, and it was on a neighboring property. The guy, I was using some coyote vocals, and. After my sequence there, I heard a four-wheeler start up off in the distance, and which was close to this guy's house. I'm assuming he was probably close to his house at the time. And he comes riding down the fence row close to where I was hunting, and he turns his four-wheeler off, hops off, and walks to a cedar tree about 10 yards away, and starts blowing on a rabbit call. And he's just standing there, and he's about 100 yards from me, and I'm full camo, leaned up against this, I think it was a walnut tree. And I thought, I dare not move because he might just go ahead and shoot me, and I didn't want to holler out or anything at the time. He did that for about 5 minutes and jumped back on his four-wheeler and headed back to the house. And I thought, oh, boy, I'm not coming back over here ever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't think about that, but if the guy's just looking for movement, you don't ever know. Some people just don't pay attention. So,
and it's funny you mentioned that because Fox Pro now on their standard units, they if you purchase the Fox Pro and it just comes with a standard call library on it, they have a call on there that is like a warning, you know, that there's somebody hunting there, and it, you know, so obviously it's happened more than just to me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
if they're gonna go ahead and produce a sound that sounds like that.
I got another question for you.
Go
here
ahead.
In the state of Missouri, just recently, like in the past year or so, it seems like, I think, mm-hmm. I may be wrong on this, but they've allowed nighttime hunting for coyotes. Have you done that? I mean, have you tried that?
Yes, I have. I wasn't a big fan of the night hunting. I've done it before Missouri had the season. I would travel to Texas and night hunt a little bit. I was no season hunter, but I was kind of against it a little bit. And then once they implemented that season last year, I thought, well, heck, I'll give it a try. I got an open mind. And, so I bought a night vision setup for a rifle. And then I ended up buying a thermal scanner, to scan with while I was calling. So I wouldn't have to try to, you know, sweep the rifle around while I was, you know, calling, see if there was something come in. And I actually enjoyed it pretty well. My wife, she went out with me a couple different times, and she's never really been coyote hunting with me before. She's deer hunting with me some. And so that was kind of something that her and I could do together, and we enjoyed it. And we killed some coyotes. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Does it seem like it's better daytime, nighttime, about the same? I mean,
I'll probably get shamed for saying this in some ways. I do. I think it is a little bit easier to call in coyotes at night.
Well, I think they're kind of a nocturnal animal anyways, really. I mean,
they are. I they say they can't see real good at night. They kind of see about like what we do. They move off their other instincts. I don't know how true that is, but that's what I've heard before. But it was a lot easier at night, but I've had some farms that got to be pretty difficult to kill coyotes in the daytime. And, I really didn't think on the farms there was really much for coyotes around there anymore until I started night hunting. And there was one farm over here west of the house that's pretty good. It's a pretty good stand of property over there, all put together in one. And we killed a lot of coyotes off of it at night. And I was thinking there wasn't that many there anymore. But it was definitely an advantage, you know, for the hunter.
Yeah, and I mean, that's anytime you can get an edge. I mean, I sure would like to be able to deer hunt at night, but I'd be able to kill this. I'd be able to kill this buck. I'm getting pictures of it too in the morning, but
maybe.
You know, and
old GW come to see you pretty quick.
And he knows where I live, so I imagine he'd be there pretty quick.
Yeah, he send you a Christmas card?
No. Drake's still got to go get his ice cream, though. But, well, you know.
Hey, Corey.
Go ahead, Justin.
Corey, you got something pretty interesting coming up at the end of January. What is that?
I'm assuming you're talking about the contest we got going on here at Houston, Missouri.
Yep.
I'll explain a little bit of that. Well, like like I said, you know, earlier, I do a lot of contest hunting, and about 4 years ago, we had a young man here around town here that was a pretty popular kid. His family, you know, were all born and raised right here, and you know, good Christian folk, and I kind of get tore up talking about it, but anyhow, Connor lost his life one night over here south of town in a bad ditch, and he was about 19 years old, and the kid, he loved predator hunt, loved to deer hunt, loved to play football, and he loved to weld. He went off just right out of high school and become a pipeliner, and he was traveling all over the United States welding and whatnot. But I'll get back to Connor. He, like I said, he liked predator hunt a lot, and he was all the time asking me questions about predator hunting, and his dad got so busy there, you know, raising him and his sister, that he didn't take Connor predator hunting like, you know, young man should have been taken. And I'm not trying to, you know, put him down or anything. He just had a busy time raising two kids. So anyhow, Connor and I had kind of a special bond talking about predator hunting all the time. Like I said, he passed away there about 4 years ago in that accident. I had this on the back of my mind about a couple months after he passed away. I talked to his dad one night about having a memorial coyote hunt in his honor. And if we did something like that, you know, I wanted to be able to raise money to go to, you know, a scholarship fund for him. And his parents gave me the blessing to do that. And so we got the ball rolling, and the Connor Clifton Memorial Scholarship Fund was built off of that. So we started this contest, and it's been pretty good for this community to kind of, you know, just kind of heal and remember and just all kind of come together and, you know, have that special bond, you know, that everybody was missing, you know, with Connor being gone. But I'll get back to the contest. I'm sorry, guys. So the first year we had it, I think it was 2019. You know, I wasn't expecting very many teams to come and, you know, something new like that. We ended up having 29 teams the first year, and we thought that was excellent. We was thinking, you know, we might have 10 or 12 teams, and ended up having almost 30. We just thought that was great. And then the following year, we ended up getting 52 teams, and next year we ended up getting 84 teams. So it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And I'll just say that, you know, it's not a big money tournament, because that's not what I created the tournament for. We created the tournament, you know, to raise money for scholarships for students that are looking to going into trade schools. That was something that was important to the family, and that was something that was important to Connor, was trade schools. And so that's what we decided to do. And last year, with all the entry fees and the donations and stuff, we ended up raising about right around $9,000 or $10,000, and they were able to give out scholarships to four different students, and that was in three different school districts. So it was pretty successful last year. I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
This is a big event, guys. With you guys not being in Texas County, I see a little bit of it. It's a big event. I mean, he has got good sponsors behind him. You know, he's got people working with him on this. This is a good one.
And I'll talk about the sponsors a little bit too, Justin. Thank you for pointing that out. So locally, I couldn't ask for anything better. I mean, there is so much support behind this. locally, it's just amazing. When you get into doing any type of organization like this, where you have to ask for donations and product or money or whatever, that's a hard thing to do, you know, especially in the last couple of years that we've had here, you know, the way the world's been, that, you know, a lot of people don't seem to want to turn loose of certain items or in property, but boy, we couldn't ask for a better support group out of this deal. I have people that call me daily, you know, wanting to do something for the event, and it's just wonderful. It just really is. I appreciate all of my sponsors, but the ones locally, I just can't ask for any better. It's just, my hat's off to them all. They've done an excellent job as far as, you know, making it so painless for me to, you know, to ask them out something. And then this year, I had two main sponsors. I had Fox Pro, High Performance Game Calls. They come through really big. They give out, they're going to give out three big units, a couple night hunting lights that they produce, and several hand calls and whatnot. So that was a pretty big help there from Fox Pro. And then I've got, Hornady Ammunition. They sent down a big package, and they actually sent down some ammo, which, you know, we all know how ammo is right now. So that was pretty nice of them to do that. And then another sponsor I'd like to throw out there was, Vortec Optics. I've worked with Vortec. I've worked with all these sponsors for the last 4 years. And that Vortec, and I'm not going to say that none are any better than the other, but Vortec, they stood up every time, don't ask much questions, and they just ask me what I'm looking for, and they'll send it down. So that it's been really, really nice working with all the sponsors. I appreciate them all.
Yeah. And to me, you know, we have sponsors try to do the sponsor thing and all that, but it's really, I mean, you want a good product, but it's also about how good's the company. You know, everything's kind of built pretty equal nowadays. I mean, really. So it's really, you need to look into, like, how do the people treat you more than how much free stuff are they going to give you? So if, you know,
absolutely.
Well, and with Vortex, we all know they have a very good product. I mean, it's not like, you know, that's top of the line stuff there. So, and if, you know, right. And like you said, they treat you good. And you going back to the small town, everybody, the community, that's anybody listening, that's America. Like, you see all this stuff on TV about how we hate each other and we're all racist, and that's what they want you to think. You get outside of all that, that's how, because everywhere I've been, it doesn't take much, and people come together and do stuff, just like you're having all your community over there doing everything for you. We've had kind of the same thing a couple times here, like something happens to somebody, and it'll amaze you how many people will give the shirt off their back. And I think, yep. I know this probably ain't got much to do with predator hunting, but people think that this country's just terrible bad, and it's not. That's just what they want you to think. I mean, you get outside of the circle up there, life's actually pretty good out here in the normal world, you know? It's not that bad, so. But
I agree.
Where can the listeners find more information on the moral hunt you're getting out there?
I've got a Facebook group, page started, and it's the initials. I did that. I had to do that because I had some anti-hunting groups trying to shut my page down last year. So it's the Connor Clifton Memorial Coyote Hunt. If you look for that in, you know, in abbreviation, you know, with just those letters, you'll find it. I don't know. It'd be CCMH is what it would be, the Connor Clifton Memorial Coyote Hunt. And I have all the information on that group of how to get started with the hunt. The hunt is going to be this year. It'll be on the 22nd and the 23rd of January. It's a day and a half hunt. most contests are a day long, you know, just a single day. I decided to do a day and a half, just in case, you know, we had like a bad weather day, you know, teams might be able to have the opportunity to, you know, salvage something out of the second day or something. And it's kind of glad, I'm kind of glad I've done that. The last 3 years we've had such bad weather on that weekend. It's either rained or snowed or both, or the wind's blowing 100 mile an hour. So it's worked out, you know, having it a day and a half there to where we're able to, like I said, maybe salvage a day out of that. But they can, like I said, if a person wants to come hunt that, they can find it on Facebook there.
We'll try to get on our Facebook page and share it. Anybody listening, if you do want any more information on this or anything, get with if you can't get a hold of Corey, get with us on the Ozark Traditions TV page, and we'll do everything we can to get you linked up. Matt's trying to.
Yeah, I'll post the deal.
I've got a. You already posted it.
I'm working on it.
He's working on it. We got our tech guy working on it. But if we could get that, I mean, anybody listening, if you're interested, just get with us. If you can't get a hold of Corey for some reason, and we'll do everything we can to get as many people involved in that as we can, because it's definitely for a good cause. So,
well, thank you guys. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're all about helping people out. We try to do it as much as we can. So it's a cool deal. It's two birds with one stone. You're helping some kids out with a scholarship, and you're promoting hunting. I mean, that's anytime you can get more people hunting, that's a good thing in my mind. So plus you're killing some coyotes, and that's always to us deer hunters. That's just, we love hearing that. So,
well, I've heard from several different people that, you know, they feel like the contest, you know, is working over here. I had an individual tell me here a few months ago that they really liked it because now they're seeing fox again around their house. And they used to just see a coyote every once in a while, and now they're starting to see fox again.
So yeah, because coyotes,
that made me feel pretty good.
Coyotes like to eat foxes, don't they?
Absolutely do. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
They will definitely run one down and eat it.
Yeah, I knew that from trapping, that coyotes are really interested in, like, if you got a lot of coyotes, you'll never trap a fox. But if you got a lot of foxes, you can trap some coyotes. So, well, Corey, I definitely want to thank you for coming on here. Me, Justin, and Matt, and the whole Ozark Traditions TV team want to thank you for coming on and talking with us about this. It was definitely interesting for me. I learned a few things. I know you got to call coyotes in different times of the year. So, me and Matt, we've got he's been doing a little trapping here, trying to do some predator control. But the coyotes, we ain't no good at trapping coyotes, so maybe we'll...
They're smarter than us.
Yeah, that's one thing about a coyote is they are very... If you've ever tried to trap one, they're probably the smartest critter in the woods. Maybe a bobcat would be right there with them, but they are very hard to catch in a trap. So,
well, I appreciate you guys for you know, calling me and inviting me on. And I love talking predators, so anytime you guys want to talk again, I'll, you know, just give me a holler. I'd be definitely up for that.
Well, I think what we might need to do is get our buddy Justin down there, Benny's, who lives close with you, to go out with you and maybe try to film a coyote hunt for the TV show.
I'm too sure he don't film the little yourself, do you?
I do. I've kind of slowed down a little bit on the filming side of it, and just focused more on, you know, killing stuff, but yes, sir. I do a little bit of filming myself.
I understand that.
We can make that happen, because I got a spot I've been wanting to kill some predators off of that there's no cows on, because everywhere else has got cows, and my cows flip out when they hear my call. So
I hate cows. I've told you guys I hate cows.
Not for at least a day or two.
I like to eat them. That's about it. All right, Corey. Well, thanks a lot, man, for coming on here from the bottom of our hearts. We enjoyed talking to you about all this, and we're going to do everything we can to promote your coyote hunt coming up. So, like I told everybody listening, if you want to find any more information out about it, just contact us or Corey. and we'll do the best we can to get you guys hooked up. So I think that'll about wrap it up for us. So once again, Corey, thanks a lot for coming on, talking with us.
Yes, sir.
We'll do best. We'll see if we can get Justin to go out there. Maybe you guys can shoot some coyotes.
Sounds good to me. Yep. Sounds like a plan.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
The Ozark Traditions TV podcast crew would appreciate it if you leave a 5-star rating and subscribe on your favorite podcast apps so you don't miss an episode. And also, be sure to check out our hunting episodes on our YouTube channel, and don't forget to subscribe. While you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and click on the follow and like button to see what the Ozark Traditions TV crew is up to. From all of us at Ozark Traditions TV, we'd like to wish you and your family a happy new year. We also would like to thank you for listening. And remember, if you see us out in God's country, stop us. We'd like to meet you.